Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Royals baseball coming up a little bit later on this afternoon. Vern's On Deck show is at noon. So just a 2-hour show today, unless there is a change in the weather forecast that alters that. But that is the plan. That is the plan. It feels, yeah, we're getting, I can declare it today. I think we are finally done with the 90s until next year.
You're calling summer over.
Yep.
You're saying over. You're ready for hoodies?
Yep. It's over.
Fire pits.
I think we're done with the 90s. I mean, we're still getting the low 80s next week and today and stuff, but I think the 90s are done until like May. Or Jews will ask him the same question if there's a personnel shift he would like to see. Nobody's saying that you should be changing everything 2 weeks in the season, but is there a player that, you know, you'd like to see play a little bit more? I told you, I think it's Breshard Smith. Cody says Jaden Hicks. Drew going with Ashton Gelati a little bit as well. We'll get into the Royals loss last night, or win last night, I'm sorry, but the play of one pitcher that they lost for much of the season and how that can impact the offseason coming up in just a bit. Interesting numbers that were floating around yesterday from Bill Barnwell about just some of the top teams in the NFL and how old teams are, how young teams are. And this is just based off of the snaps and age. You just got done saying you think defensively they're not playing a lot of young guys, but it's kind of intriguing to see it broken down this way. So, for example, the Chiefs' average age on offense is 27.2 years old.
Whew.
That is the middle of the pack of the league, 16th. They are they're not the oldest, they're not the youngest. They're in the middle.
And that's with an older
30-year-old quarterback.
Well, Patrick Mahomes is in the top 10 oldest quarterbacks in the NFL because so many teams have bad quarterbacks, a lot of them are in their 20s.
If you're wondering, the youngest offense in the league right now is the Rams, or the oldest, I'm sorry, offense in the league is the Rams.
Stafford's really not helping that.
Mm-hmm. The Packers are the youngest along with the Jets and the Seahawks. So the Seahawks are at 25.6 years of average age on the offense, Jets 3, Packers 25.8. On the defensive side of the ball, the Chiefs, younger, but not maybe as young as we would like it based on more snaps for Noel Williams. So the Chiefs, 26.5 years old is the average age. That's 22nd.
So they're younger, but they're older compared to the rest of the league.
Correct.
Teams typically start younger defensive players.
Overall, they skew older, still as a whole entire team. 22 is where they rank, which again, that's going to be, or skew younger, I'm sorry. The five oldest teams, Steelers, Commanders, Browns, Broncos, Vikings, five youngest teams in football. I already mentioned Packers, Jets, Seahawks, Cowboys, Eagles. So more on the NFC side in terms of the younger teams in the NFL, for whatever reason, just the way it's worked out. I guess, is that intriguing to you at all to see, you know, we talk about roster turnover and, you know, where you draft and things like that. You have to turn over the roster, but they still, like, I think they actually right now have done a nice job. They've balanced it pretty well. They have not gone full youth movement. You can't when you have a team that's trying, you know, to win now. But also at the same time, you know, they're not the Steelers who are basically the oldest team in football, or one of the oldest teams in football.
I think if you look at it, it's encouraging to me, because I think that part of the offensive age is being skewed by the fact that Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce exist. Like, that is skewing where they are, because I think if you actually thought about it, the Chiefs' offense is incredibly young. They've got two offensive linemen who are just barely into their second contracts in the NFL, so they're still in their, not even into their 30s, in their mid-20s, late-20s. Then you've got an entire group of wide receivers all on rookie deals. Royals, Worthy, Rice, like nobody's, you know, Juju's skewing that thing up, and he's the fourth or fifth option on the team.
True.
Hell, even Tyquan Thornton's still in his 20s. And so, like, I actually think the offense skews younger than you think, and it's just the Kareem Hunt, Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes of the world. I think I feel better about that unit. Defensively, I'm kind of torn. Because defensively, I understand something that's going to happen very quick, which is, what are you going to do when Chris Jones isn't around? And the fact that you're already on a second contract, like we mentioned, for George Karlaftis, and you'll be on a second contract for Trent McDuffie here soon
enough. Our top pick next year, there's a real chance it's the defensive lineman.
And maybe an interior defensive lineman or somebody who can get to the quarterback in a hurry. That unit feels older to me. And part of it is because, not that they're physically older than the offensive side of the ball. They've been with the team for a long time. And as you just pointed out, defenses skew younger in the NFL. A lot of teams play 23, 24, 25-year-old defensive players. And some of their players just feel like they've longer in the tooth than that, I guess.
Here's where, like, some of the contenders in the AFC, at least over the last couple of years, if you're just wondering. So, for example, a team like the Buffalo Bills. So, where the Chiefs on offense, I said, were 27.2, the Bills are also 27.2 average age. Defensively, the Bills are 26.9 average age. The Chiefs, I told you, are 26.9, literally, or 26.5, and they're also 26.5. The Chiefs and Bills have identical average age on offense and defense.
But here are their oldest players in the team. The offense, it's a liar. They are one of, and this is why I'll give them a lot of time to grow this year, especially when they get other players back. In my opinion, they're one of the youngest offenses in the NFL. Here are their five oldest players. One, doesn't matter, it's Patrick Mahomes. He's their third oldest player.
Oh, the Chiefs, not the Bills, sorry.
Unimportant, okay. Because he's the quarterback. Robert Tonyan, Travis Kelce, Kareem Hunt, Gardner Minshew, Juju Smith-Schuster. Every other player on the team is 28 years or younger, and I would argue far more important players for where they're headed in their future.
Sure.
Like, way more important. Because, like, Travis Kelce's only for this year. He's not the long-term part of where those things are. Every other player on the roster, including all their wide receivers, essentially, are, like, 25 and under. And so, like, even Trey Smith's only 26. And so, like, I think the offense is still younger than even it looks like on paper. 16th is a bit of a misnomer because the two old tight ends and Kareem Hunt and Gardner Minshew are on the roster, you know? And Gardner's still not even 30. And so, I still think that there's a lot of growth there. All the young defensive players don't play. That's the problem. Bassa, Gelati, Noel Williams, Jaden Hicks, and Omar Norman Lott are their five youngest players. Any of those guys play more than 40% of the snaps?
No, and again, this number is not based on...
Maybe Gelati, but that's it.
It's important.
He's right at that mark.
Yeah, it's important to mention, the way they're doing the age stuff on this is based on snaps through week 2. Not necessarily, like, looking at the roster and going average. This is based on who's actually playing. So I know...
That's why the defense is skewing older.
Right, but it's based off that, but also you listed off some of the vets. Like, Robert... Yes, you're saying that, hey, they're actually really young. It doesn't count. Now, the numbers I'm giving you, though, are based on who's played, though. So, yeah, Robert Tonyan.
Juju's had to play more, I would argue.
Yeah,
but
now,
sure.
Robert Tonyan, I don't know how many snaps has he played in the first 2 weeks. It can't be much. It can't be that. More in week 2,
I'll be honest, when I was looking up the snap counts earlier, I did not look up.
You weren't focusing on Robert Tonyan. Point is, just there's some guys that this number's already factoring in them not playing. That's all.
But sure.
Anyway, isn't that something, though, that, like, going back even, like, to the last conversation, is that something that Spags has to adjust to?
No.
Like,
I mean, he's had the number one defense in the league, so this is one of those, like, real tough situations. Would I like him to play younger players more, Drew? Yep. Do I get to be like, hey, man, what's the deal? Why don't you play any of these guys more? It's like I run into a murky territory.
No, but to your point, when Chris Jones is gone, they are going to he's going to have no choice. But has to play a young player. He's going to have to play a rookie. And again, somebody mentioned it yesterday. It's tough.
But Chris Jones is under contract for another 2+ years, and by then they'll either sign another free agent, big time player, or they'll be drafted. You know what I mean?
Like, I know, is that where they're going to figure it? Is that where they're going to do stuff?
I'm not telling you
Spags is there. Where, you know what? I don't want a rookie starting for me. You can draft one, but I want you to go sign somebody in free agency.
Robert Tonyan, by the way, has played 10% of the snaps.
Okay. Yeah, Drew, I would say, again, unless they move on from Chris Jones earlier, in 2 years, if we think they might have to draft a defensive lineman in the first round this year, who's to say that defensive lineman isn't legit in 2 years? He's not a young player. You know what I'm saying?
Gelati could, like, be a better player 2 years from now.
If Chris Jones was gone after this season, then yeah, I think you're right. They would go the free agent big time player route more than they would go and want to start a young player. But that's I guess what I'm saying is, like, they're going to have 2 years to prepare for his departure.
A lot of this is they're going to have to get way younger and play younger players, Drew, not because Spags is going to be forced into it, but because the thing that we don't want to admit, which is their cap problems are going
That's
to start being far more real.
Yeah.
Right now, they're able to survive their cap. But
Chris Jones' cap in next year is a mess.
It's astronomical. It's so high. And Patrick Mahomes' number goes up. And some of these other players who are playing a lower number to right now's numbers go up. And so, like, as much as I'd like to just sit here and pretend that they're never going to have cap issues with Patrick Mahomes at some point, reality is reality. Sure. And they are going to have to, like, suffer the consequences of their cap, and that typically comes with young. That's why I feel great about the offense. Right now, there's not a single player
they're
playing
on offense.
You should
feel good about the offense, yes.
There's not a single player offensively that I like going for, that I think is a four-year player for them, that isn't already paid and figured out underneath the cap, or a wide receiver in their rookie deal. And I'll be honest, based on recent news events, I think there's a decent chance they're getting a discount on Rashee Rice if he ends up being really good when he comes back. Because
the Tyreek Hill discount contract, the first time, you mean.
There was an article out at Yahoo Sports today that, you know, like Rashee Rice's, like the lawyers against Rashee Rice in one of the civil cases for the person he had hurt in an accident, had said they still hadn't paid any of the $500,000 that for the first payment of the $1.2 million or whatever he owes, because funds. Right? A little short on cash. Not surprising. Rashee Rice hasn't made much money, and I imagine he had to spend a fortune paying just the lawyers to get to this part. He might be a discount guy in a year. And so, like, the offense is where I feel good. Defensively, at some point, they're either going to have to draft some superstars, which is very tough, finding a play of Chris Jones' caliber, or they're going to have to be young everywhere and athletic everywhere and hope that they've got one or two stars you mentioned they can, like, pay in free agency.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though, is that if they draft a defensive lineman and Chris Jones, like, if they draft a defensive lineman this year, which the class, unfortunately, is not that great at defensive tackle, so as it looks right now, but if they draft a defensive tackle and he's that dude and Chris Jones looks a little bit washed next year, but Spags is like, nah, I got to play Chris Jones because he's my, then that's what I think the problem is, where if he's like, well, I got to play Bolton because he's my guy, or I got to play Shamari Connor because he's my guy. I don't care if he misses tackles and can't cover.
But by then he might play them because they're a second year, a third year player. By then he likes playing them.
It doesn't make any sense, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's that, but also
he's that good of a coach.
I'll push back, though. Like, I know you were giving an example, but like you said, if Chris Jones is washed in a year, kind of like Nick Bolton. I think sometimes these conversations we're having about Bolton.
No, I did not say Nick Bolton was washed. I said he likes players like Nick Bolton.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I thought you were calling Nick Bolton.
No,
that's
what it sounded like.
Because same with Chris Jones, like acting like Chris Jones or Nick Bolton. It's one thing if you can say, hey, you don't like how they're playing. I disagree with that. Either player looks like they're just done or washed or whatever. That would have been, to me, kind of crazy to say. That's all.
We're okay.
Nick Bolton's still, 27?
Gold, I did see big news for your alma mater today. Yes. All the reports is that they're heading to London.
Yeah,
I can't believe, first off, I just assumed that there was a college football game that's been played in London to this point, but apparently
never.
Not. There hasn't been a game for the power conferences that have been played in London. And according to reports, Kansas will take on Arizona State as a Kansas home game in London at Wembley in early September next year. You're normally anti-giving up home games, but in college they get like 15 of them. So what do I care?
The only reason why this makes sense next year is KU Stadium is still going to be under construction, and so they will have reduced capacity. If you were ever to do it, this year would, or last year would have been the year to do it, or next year, right? Like last year when they were playing games at Arrowhead and Sporting, that would have been a year to do this. Or next year when the east side of the stadium is still going to be under construction. So I guess this would be the time to do it. Brett McMurphy says it's going to happen next year on September 19th, 2026. It is a home game, as you said, so there's a ton of money involved here. The same reason why K-State went to Ireland. They got a ton of money to give up a home game. The worry, of course, is the trip hangover. People will use that if you're a K-State fan. For some of that, I would say Iowa State's looked just fine since the trip. This is a conference game as well, and if it's in week four, my guess is they would have a bye week set up right after. So we'll see. Yeah, it's going to happen. In general, yeah, I'm not a fan of giving up a home game ever to go play internationally. But if you're going to have less seats available for fans to begin with, it makes it out to be a pretty smart financial decision for Kansas if that's the case next year.
I think it's overall, this follows the one thing I would say, the single best quality of Brett Yormark to this point is he understands that they can't be the Big Ten of the SEC of football and they're never going to get the exposure. So they're going to have to buy their exposure. They're going to have to build a brand, and they're going to have to go branding and marketing and exposure and big ideas. And so if two of your teams from the conference are willing to go over there for the Union Jack series is what they call it, hopefully all Big 12 teams, well then do it. Pop them over and brand the hell out of it. Put it on early in the morning. Gold, same thing. I bet if Kansas is playing at 8 in the morning, you'll be up. You'll put the game on. You'll watch. Yormark is good at marketing. He's very, very good at that. I actually think that that's why they survived instead of the Pac-12. Nobody knew what the Pac-12 brand was anymore. The Big 12 at least had an identity.
Yeah, he's willing to take risks. He's innovative. You know, in general, I don't think there's many fan bases that want their program going overseas and giving up games. I think they made this decision with these teams. It may, you know, you have Arizona State, who at this point is played well, but they don't have a ton of ties to the Big 12 rivalries yet. They're new. And then Kansas, you found a team that's still upgrading their stadium, and next year they're going to have fewer seats available. So it kind of is a perfect fit. In the future, it'll be interesting what teams are willing to give up that game that aren't making changes to their stadium, that are more established, et cetera. You know, nobody's going to want to give up a rivalry game overseas. So it would have to be games
like
this.
You don't want KU-K State.
Yeah, like I know Farmageddon's a rivalry, but like I'm talking about, like, you're not playing KU-K State in Ireland or London, right?
Farmageddon is a decent rivalry.
Farmageddon's a big rivalry.
Yeah, but it's not an in-state rivalry.
From the 785, did you say the stadium will be in construction next year? That's 3 years. The Empire State Building was built in 1 year.
Yeah, phase two of the project hasn't started.
They started talking about raising funds for the stadium like 15 years ago. So you should just be happy it's being built.
Yeah, like, phase two of the project once this football season is over, they immediately start demolishing the east side of the stadium and working on the phase two.
Yeah.
The Gateway District.
I'm excited. I think it's good for the Big 12. I think it's good for Kansas. Both things are important. You know, we haven't seen a lot of international
college football games, too.
The only difference is like the student athlete stuff is so far gone out the window. I borderline wonder why we make them go to class at all. What are we doing? What is this student part of the student athlete part?
Says Professor Tapp of the University of Missouri, Kansas City, or Kansas City University.
The next time you have an athlete, you should just ask him why.
I have an athlete in my class right now.
No, so what you should do is when they show up, you should ask legitimately. Just be like, why are you in here?
Well, in fairness,
why are you coming to my class? Just straight up ask him that. Why are you here?
My class is unavailable online.
You're a pro athlete,
and slightly different than the Division I collegiate football level versus whoever I've got on like the golf team.
College football coverage on 96.5 The Fan is brought to you by Bud Light. Bud Light and Tanners are teaming up to make every college game day legendary. Every Saturday, rep your college team, catch every play, and enjoy $15 buckets only at Kansas area Tanners locations. Bud Light and Tanners, from the stands to the bar, your game day headquarters. Up next, we'll talk about the Royals briefly after Cole Reagans made his return to the rotation. What could that set up for the offseason? Coming up in 25 minutes, Danan Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver, part of the Chiefs radio network. He, of course, will be in the Meadowlands Sunday night on the call with Mitch Holthus and Josh Klingler right here on 96.5 The Fan. I really want to ask him about, I don't know if he ever played with, the harness on the shoulder that Worthy might have to play with. If he plays, he will have to play with. Or if he had a teammate, just what does he think the limitation, if any, could be from Worthy? We'll try to get some inside knowledge on that from Danan in just a little bit. But let's pivot a little bit to baseball for a second. The Royals, of course, had a series continuing against the Mariners last night. They also have a game this afternoon right here on 96.5 The Fan. It was a 7-5 win. That part doesn't really matter. It's the fact that
back to 500.
Cole Reagans returned to the rotation yesterday after missing a good chunk of this season, unfortunately. And we know there were going to be limitations in his debut back. 3 2/3, gave up one hit, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts.
First inning looked awesome.
Yeah, first inning, you're like, okay. And as we discussed with Vern yesterday, he'll get one more outing probably, right, before the season's over. And
yeah, I don't think based on the timing he'd get to.
I think he gets one more. And can he look good enough to where at least it keeps the door open that he's one of the pitchers you could potentially think about using to acquire an outfielder? Now, he alone is not going to get you what you want, but can he and somebody else package together versus it just being, in my opinion, a Noah Cameron type? Chris Bubich, I don't think, is tradable with the injury. So Cole Reagans would be another option if he can show that he's healthy, that he can get through some starts. He only has one more, though, to prove that.
Cole Reagans is under contract for 3 more years after this one for the Royals and makes nothing. I mean, just absolutely nothing. He makes $4.5 million next year. He makes $7.5 million the year after that. And then they'll have to arbitration eligible argue over a fee, probably make him about a $10 million pitcher.
Okay.
That's nothing. That's just no money in Major League Baseball, especially as the cap and numbers come up. And you also know that probably around that 2027 range, is anyone going to play? Are you going to lose an entire? Look, you really do have to think about this stuff. Are you going to lose one of the 3 years? Because I know the players are going to argue that whatever year they hold out on, that those don't count against them as far as contract years or anything else in between, and they don't want those actively working against them. Here's the truth. I just want to know who you're willing to trade. Are you willing to trade Cole Reagans? Are you willing to trade Noah Cameron? Are you willing to trade Chris Bubich? Are you willing to trade Burgert, yes, or Kolek, yes, or, you know, like, because as it sits, Waka, and I don't think, like, Waka, because of
he's
his age and all that other
stuff,
give
you enough back in return.
Sure. They are not short on available options to do it. An old me think, I'd have been like, man, I don't want, like, Cole Reagans, a dirt cheap ace when healthy? That's not the kind of person I want trading, almost never. Their recent development of pitching is making me way faster and looser on my willingness to trade almost any of them. Is that
that
might be insane, but like they're just calling up anybody and they're successful at this point.
I think it's fair, and it's frankly it's similar to what the Rays have done in their history. You know, we all know that the ties with Matt Quatrero to that organization, and they're always used as kind of the example that people try to for pitching development. And you have to be willing to, you know, turn over the pitching staff a little bit more often than maybe some other organizations. You know, you max them out. Frankly, maybe the way you're teaching them how to pitch as well, is that tougher on the arm? I don't know, right? But you also, you know, you know your pitcher better than any other organization. Yeah. And so is the clock ticking on anybody as well in terms of health? All that knowledge that you have to use that to your advantage as well. What you're describing would be, to me, what the Rays have done a lot throughout their history. Some really, really good pitchers they were willing to trade when they were still pitching pretty well, but they felt confident in their development to turn it over and continue to add assets.
Like when they traded Chris Archer, it did not impact them at all. They just traded away a guy who was like a ace-level starter, who was cheap and under control, and they just moved on from Chris Archer, and they're just like, and Tyler Glasnow, they're like, eh. Like, for the most part, look, it's been a little bit rockier lately, but their pitching development allowed them to move on from guys. And the truth is, very similar to how I feel now, they have more guys in their system who are closer to helping them at the big league level at pitching than they do hitting. Maybe it's Ben Kuderna, right? Didn't he just get promoted to AAA like a month ago? Maybe he's on the doorstep. And look, it's probably far too many years for me to discuss David Shields, but as their organizational pitcher of the year is only 18 years old, he might only be 2 years away from helping you at the end of this Cole Reagans thing. I genuinely think there's not a pitcher who should be considered safe, and you should be looking at return for the player you want more than the name of the pitcher. And that includes guys like Noah Cameron, who have impossibly cheap control for the next 5 years.
913-586-7965. Someone says, why do you have to trade for an outfielder? Just pay for one. I would agree with that model this past offseason. The tricky thing is if you take a little peek on the projected
Kyle Schwarber, nothing.
You take a look at the projected free agent outfielders, there's not many options. I'm not saying there isn't a option. There's not many options. And so how else are you going to acquire an outfielder? Well, that would be via trade, and the assets that you have are more plentiful in the pitching department, or if you go down to the minors, obviously, and you're willing to trade a prospect like Blake Mitchell, which to me they should be willing to if they believe Carter Jensen's the future. I don't know if they do, but it sounds like it. And that's more of a near-term thing than it is.
I love how much Carter Jensen gets on base.
If your argument is like they should have just spent money for an outfielder, well, yeah, that goes back to this past offseason. I think it's very evident at this point in time they made a mistake in how they evaluated their offseason of the outfield position. I mean, they completely
they thought they could get by.
They're starting left fielder and right fielder and opening day. One's not even in baseball anymore. The other one's stuck in AAA.
He just got the cycle in AAA.
He did. He was like the International League player.
He is a genuinely confusing player.
Yeah.
But by the way, like, we're talking about a guy who ends up in a trade this year that we don't need to talk about.
He just gets thrown in probably, though.
Yes. I'm not saying he's getting you something in return. I'm just stating a fact that I'd be surprised if MJ Melendez is still a member of the Royals organization by the time 2026 starts. That's all.
Yeah, we'll see. This won't be the last time we talk about this convo. This will be one of the biggest stories, not just with him, Cole Reagans, in general. How do they go and acquire that outfielder? Who are you willing to part ways with? And yeah, you're going to have to part ways if you go the trade route with someone that you think is pretty good. Hence, they have value. That's the tough decisions that J.J. Piccolo gets paid to make and will have to make this offseason. All right, let's talk some more NFL. Colin Cowherd was talking about coaches, and we've discussed the Andy Reid future and his track record and how people will view him when his career's over, right?
And how legacy, that's been going for Belichick.
His legacy, in contrast to how it looks like it's ending for Belichick. Andy Reid might be ending on a heater. I understand they're 0-2 right now, but in general, he's winning titles at the end, whereas Belichick wasn't. Another name that's part of this convo that we've never really talked about, at least according to Colin Cowherd, is how about Jim Harbaugh? Listen to his argument about Harbaugh being the greatest coach of all time.
Football's different. There's the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and then there's the College Football Hall of Fame. But I was thinking this morning that if you combined it like basketball, And it was just, there was a football Hall of Fame. You could count college and pro. I would make an argument today. The greatest coach in the history of football is not Bill Belichick or Bill Walsh or Vince Lombardi. It's Jim Harbaugh, the greatest coach ever. Think about this. He's never failed. He's 5-for-5 at San Diego, Stanford, San Francisco 49ers, Michigan, and the Chargers. He's never failed. Saban and Urban, unbelievable college legends, struggled in the NFL. He's also not tied to a single player. What's Belichick without Brady? Not great. The only person that kind of compares to him is Jimmy Johnson.
So I actually think he makes some good points. I think there's some points that are very, very strong.
He didn't fail anywhere.
He hasn't failed anywhere, and it's true. He does not have the quarterback attached to him that you say, oh, this is why he had successes at him or the quarterback. Those are strong points. The one part he leaves out, though, that I think has to always be factored in the same way it is, at least with part of your opinion, not everything, but part of your opinion with Belichick, and that is, hey, Harbaugh has been caught and punished for cheating while coaching.
Yes.
In a serious way. Now, the title, as we discussed at the time, it's not like the title gets stripped away from his record or anything. But we also know there's cheating allegations around his career. That, to me, kind of hurts your case to be the greatest of all time.
And also just like,
come on,
you're asking me to weigh it in a very weird way. So championships have to matter when we have the greatest of all time debates. Mm-hmm. They have to matter some. And again, the Bill Russell versus some of the others era also matters, and when you're able to win it, right? If you're playing in the 30s and you can just win title after title after title after title, and there's no safeguards, right? I care less about the Yankees titles in the 30s when, like,
sure,
you know, the league wasn't integrated and a million other things, right? Tough on Saban. Saban wasn't a total. He wasn't. Let's not lump him in with Urban Meyer in the NFL. Saban was a 500 coach in the NFL and won 7 national championships at 2 different programs.
Sure.
And he's not tied to a single player either. So if I'm combining both,
but we're having the greatest of all time combo. Yeah. And so he needed to have more NFL success, right?
Maybe, but like, what is Harbaugh's NFL success? He doesn't have an NFL title. He's coached in 1 Super Bowl.
And that's far more than what Saban in the NFL.
I know, though. But like, that's not enough to discount 5 national championships.
Yeah,
you know,
someone's
like,
saying, what has he done it with the Chargers? Remember, he coached the 49ers as well.
So somebody brings up...
No, you do. I'm just saying the texter.
Somebody brings up the ultimate point. I think the one person who actually could challenge him and might actually be better in this conversation is Pete Carroll.
He's done the exact same thing.
Yeah, and except for he's won the Super Bowl.
He's won
actually
the Super Bowl and has won a national...
Wait,
yeah.
One or two.
Yeah, I think... and
one.
Yeah. He's... I think if you wanted to use the example, I think Pete Carroll actually is the example that that Colin Cowherd should be using if he wants to take this route of success.
You're probably going to hate this. And I'll just tell you, like, Gold, there's plenty of arguments like we mentioned before on the other side as well. You know what the single biggest problem I have with this is that I think coaching college is easier. I think it's way, way, way easier. I don't think it's about being a coach. You can have... The advantages you have coaching in college at play, and I know he won at San Diego State, but he didn't, you know, like, but like the advantages you have coaching at USC, coaching at Michigan, you are infinitely on, like, instantly better than 98% of all colleges. Your roster is better, your team's better. You don't have to like negotiate a cap or coach better. It's just, it's easier to coach.
You know how many college coaches have gone to the NFL because they think college is too hard?
I think coaching in college.
To give you an example, to give you a direct example, Jeff Hafley, who's the DC at Green Bay, quit mid-season because he thought coaching in the NFL was easier because it was only about coaching. If you're a coach in college, you have to deal with recruiting and meetings and traveling the country trying to get money in NIL, and then you also have to coach.
Isn't coaching. Getting NIL money,
that's part of the job, Cody.
It is absolutely part of being a coach.
Yeah, if your argument is that, hey, if you're at Michigan versus another school, you have more resources, therefore it makes
way more.
Okay, if that's your argument, I get it, but I'm with Drew on the idea, though, like the argument that it's just on game day, that's all you do, that's all that it counts for, is not true
at all.
That's
why people love the NFL, like, is because it's only coaching. I don't have to worry about any of the other crap.
I think there's pros and cons to both, obviously, and why one coach won the other, but I do agree with Drew on the point of recruiting is a huge part of the job. And now, I would actually argue coaching now is tougher than it was 10 years ago in college.
Which doesn't have Harbaugh in this argument.
Because this is why programs are hiring GMs. Because now the coach, they're trying to make it to where the coach doesn't have to manage the cap, essentially, of NIL. But there are coaches that are doing that. Recruiting, you know what a headache? I mean, right now, you're dealing with a quarterback that, you know, he's pissed because he lost the starting job. Now he wants to transfer, and you got to massage this kid's ego or whatever. It's just, to me, coaching would be, in college would be, a disaster.
I'm not saying it's not like a bigger headache. Yes. I just don't think it's as hard. Yeah. The other part is like championships are also going to hurt Harbaugh on this. Like he's been successful everywhere he's been, but what does he have? One in a,
he's got one
college football title.
Yes, correct.
That ain't enough. Not well, to be the greatest.
People are also going back.
Get closer.
Yeah. Again, we're talking football. Someone says, what about John Wooden? We're not talking about he's talking college football. And he's talking football coaches, not basketball coaches. I also think someone brought up, if you go Colin Coward's argument, then Barry Switzer's in the mix of this as well, because he obviously was involved.
And you mentioned Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
Johnson's a good example.
So there's a bunch there. I just think the cheating thing is a big part of it. Someone brought up Pete Carroll cheating. Here's where that one, I think he gets more of a pass, frankly, is he was involved with the Reggie Bush thing, which he was never personally connected to, which has since been, everybody agrees, was just completely ludicrous. So I don't think people view Pete Carroll as a cheater the way they maybe would view Harbaugh.
The same thing that goes on now.
Yeah. I also view, I'll just be, and this is like personal, obviously everyone can view it a little bit different. Do you guys view, I review recruiting cheating different than like I'm taping your practice. Like,
yeah,
paying players, I don't care. They were probably going to come to Michigan.
Anyway. I agree with that. It's still cheating, but I know what you're saying.
You know,
100%.
It's a weighted cheating to me.
Wait, like, which is why Belichick, like, I think, which is
stupid, but I really
I know what
do,
you're trying to say. Yeah.
I really do.
If there
was
a worst cheater,
different.
You would label Belichick as the worst cheater. Yeah,
absolutely.
Because he filmed people's. Way worse cheating.
That's a schematic advantage and all that. Now, recruiting is a huge part of your program, and cheating to get a better player is, having said talent on your team is also a huge freaking deal to be able to get. So, interesting conversation. I don't think I agree with Coward on Harbaugh being the greatest coach of all time. I'll tell you that because I think it opens by that criteria. It opens it up for so many other individuals. We'll talk with Dane and Hughes here in about 12 minutes or so. But the Chiefs are going to play Russell Wilson on Sunday night. What's your confidence check just as we sit Thursday at 10:50 in the morning on taking on Russell Wilson, knowing what the Chiefs have looked like, knowing what the Giants have looked like?
He looked pretty good in that game against the Cowboys.
And oddly enough, that makes me more confident. I don't believe Russell Wilson can put together two great performances at this stage of his career.
I was curious because of how good he looked. Does it worry you that the defense will backslide a little bit or they're going to have to get in a shootout?
I mean, neighbors is a problem.
Definitively something I don't want them getting in. I do not want the Chiefs getting in a shootout with anyone until the rest of their offensive weapons are back. I don't think that that's a good way for them to win or a successful way for them to win. I thought maybe you'd disagree. I also do not think Russell Wilson is capable of putting together back-to-back games like that. I think Russell Wilson is the kind of quarterback that occasionally he can still show you that he had it once.
Yeah,
you're like, oh yeah, remember when that's what Russ looked like week in and week out and they were a Super Bowl contending team every time? That's nice. More often than not, he looks like what he looked like in week one, which was terrible. He threw for 168 yards and completed 45% of his passes. He's just as likely to be that than the Cowboys version.
I'm probably like a 7 out of a 10 confidence the Chiefs win. Like, it's probably a 7. Like, before the season, I would have said this would be a 10. It's probably a 7 for me heading into Sunday's game.
I mean, 7-8? Yeah, I mean, I can't go lower than 5, can I? It's the Giants. Malik Nabers is a huge
still
problem.
Still not a coin flip game or anything. In my
but, like, opinion. What else do they bring to the table? Besides, they have a good defensive line.
Defensive front is impressive.
Yeah, the defensive front is good.
Very
but
impressive.
But also, for as impressive as it is, Cowboys had no trouble carving them up.
The Cowboys also have CeeDee Lamb and all their Pickens weapons offensively. You know, that's the issue,
I know,
right?
But they
Williams. they have better.
Devonta Williams, let's not make out like he's a superstar.
Their rushing attack is better set up than what the Chiefs got right now.
That's a really low bar. I'd say that about 27 teams in the NFL.
You know, the Chiefs could have signed Javonte Williams for the same amount of money they're paying Elijah Mitchell, roughly.
Yikes.
No, it was a miss.
Yikes.
Look, Elijah Mitchell was a miss. I don't think there's any way. He's been inactive back-to-back game days.
Correct.
That was a whiff.
Correct.
Now, it was only a $1 million whiff. My biggest, you know what was a bigger whiff in my opinion? Giving that money to Kareem Hunt instead of Javonte Williams.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I had from the beginning was, why are you giving it to an aging back who didn't show burst last year?
Mm-hmm.
Now you think, and at least he was off the street and didn't have any miles on the tires when the season started last year. What is Kareem Hunt going to look like week 7 this year? Like, anybody want to ask that question? We don't think he looks like he has burst now. What happens when he's playing 40% of the snaps and it's week 7?
Javonte,
because he's going to look like he's running in quicksand by the time we hit there. I hope Rashard Smith knows the system by then.
If my math is right, Javonte Williams has 57 more rushing yards than Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt combined this season.
That's not great. I get, but he's just like, yeah, he's whatever. I've watched a lot of Javonte Williams because he played with Denver for a long time. The other problem you have with Williams is the same as other teams will ask about, like J.K. Dobbins. He looks good now, Drew. Will his body will he be available to play in a couple of weeks? He might not be.
I think you guys are right, though, in the fact that the way that the Cowboys carved up the Giants' defense, it should give you some encouragement. Not that the Chiefs can do the same thing, but that they should be more effective and trust that the defense, if they give the same sort of performance they did against Philly, then they'll be totally fine and they'll win the game. It's not going to be an issue.
Somebody says running back is only as good as their offensive line. I actually do not think. I think that there is both Someone things is, at play.
But the Texans calling Genty a bust. He's 2 weeks into his NFL career. He's not a bust.
I do think that part of the problem Ashton Genty is having is related to his offensive
line. Right, but he's not a bust yet.
No.
I mean, he got two weeks into his career and he hasn't been. Like, I mean, come on. He didn't blow out his knee and you're like, oh man, he's never going to be the same. He's 2 weeks into his career. He's been okay. He has not lived up to the top.
Pretty bad, but it's also like, yeah, it's so what? It's two games. Like, and I know that someone's going to say that, well, can't you say that about Pacheco? I'm like, I think we're seeing out of the Chiefs run game what we expected. And I'm not saying offensive line bears no weight. I'm not saying that's a zero factor in this. But I'll be honest, people who know football well, Mitchell Schwartz, people who like no offensive line play, no running back play, no football, grind tape, however you want to look at it. I've watched 10 clips from the last two games where Isaiah Pacheco does not go the right way. He chooses the wrong hole. He runs into his own offensive lineman when there is a hole. He doesn't go outside when Joshua Williams, you know, like multiple. There's multiple opportunities that he has had in the run game that he's not taken advantage of.
I agree.
So I don't know that it's, I'm not saying the offensive line bears no weight in this discussion, but it's, look, Russell Wilson, I don't know. He'll probably just be in the middle of those two. He'll have like 200 yards and a touchdown. And the Malik Nabers part should scare us, but at least they held down A.J. Brown and held down Devonta Smith pretty good in the last game. And
they'll just don't try to pass the ball, whereas we know the Giants will. Russell Wilson just going to throw it up there and hope his guy gets it.
That's my only concern is the way they blitzed, that was the Eagles' offensive game plan. What if I just throw the ball up in the air and hope my guy gets it? I don't know that there's a single defender in the NFL I trust in a jump ball situation against Malik Nabers. Not, and certainly not the Chiefs. That's Trent McDuffie's size. That's the one time it actively hurts him.
Sure.
Is it like Devonta Smith can just, he's bigger. He can just be bigger than him in that moment. The coverage stuff doesn't matter. Trent McDuffie was standing right next to Devonta Smith and still couldn't defend that pass. So that the over-under, what do we say? 3.5, they say? Moonball? What's our verdict on that?
Oh, they say on the broadcast? Yeah, over. Collinsworth will mention Moonball at least four times on the broadcast Sunday night.
Just wait for it.
Up next,
just wait for it, Cody.
Let's talk about wide receivers like Malik Nabers, like Xavier Worthy, with a former wide receiver. Danen Hughes joins us next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.